Power on.
Hi, friends, and welcome to the Pop Culture Retro-Rama Podcast. I'm your host, Vic Sage, and I'm here to share memories, thoughts, and information on all manner of retro-related properties. Movies.
Are you telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
Music.
I want my MTV. All right.
Comic books.
These ain't your daddy's comic books, fanboy.
And toys.
It's Castle Grayskull.
And it's mine.
Broadcasting to you from the depths of the Retroist Vault. So, come join us, won't you?
Now, you're playing with power.
Friends, thank you for joining us once again down here in the Retroist Vault for another episode of the Pop Culture Retro-Rama Podcast. For this show, I'm going to be discussing a television show that is tied to some of my earliest memories. That is, the anthropomorphic comedy musical group, The Banana Splits.
Fan letter time!
Here's one, Drooper. Dear Banana Splits Club, I like you so much that I keep a big trunk of bananas in my room, but my sister doesn't like it. What should I do? Signed, Unhappy.
Dear Unhappy, if your sister doesn't like you keeping bananas in your trunk, then put a skunk in your trunk. She'll soon be glad to have the bananas back.
I have mentioned on the Retroist site, as well as other podcasts, that I grew up in a single-parent household. Until I was nearly three, I lived with my mother and her husband in a little apartment in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Memories of that time are a little scattershot, but beyond recalling seeing syndicated episodes of George Reeves' Superman, Looney Tunes, Rocky and Bullwinkle, as well as the Three Stooges, I most remember sitting in the apartment floor watching The Banana Splits. I also have one memory of Christmas while living there, and it involved receiving both a Banana Splits coloring book as well as a puzzle. The coloring book, which I have since found online, is a little odd, as some of the designs don't 100% match that of the characters from the TV show. For example, some of them aren't wearing their hats or some of their costumes. The puzzle, though, which was a Whitman version, featured an illustration of the colorful characters on a snowy slope. When my father regained custody, I continued to watch The Banana Splits, thanks to its long run in syndication. Which, speaking of, The Banana Splits Adventure Hour was originally broadcast on Saturday mornings on NBC, starting on September 7th, 1968, and running until September 5th of 1970. In total, 31 episodes were produced. That syndicated period for the series began in 1971 and ran until 1982. Not too shabby for a series only totaling 31 episodes, right? I guess this is as good a time as any to mention the Banana Splits themselves. The group consisted of four members. You had Flegel, the guitar-playing dog and leader of the group, who wore a bow tie and, like the rest of the Banana Splits, wears a bright red sort of helmet/hat. Bingo is a cross between an ape and an orangutan, with a big, friendly smile. Bingo wears a vest and has a tendency to play either a cymbal or the drums when the band is performing their musical numbers. Next up is Drooper, an easygoing lion who also wears green-tinted sunglasses. He was always my favorite character, by the way. Last but not least is Snorky, who is mentioned as Snork in the opening song. A keyboard-playing elephant that didn't speak but made honking sounds. Interestingly enough, in the first season of the show, the costume looked like the character was a giant gray walking mop with some serious John Lennon-looking inspired sunglasses. By the time of the second season, the character looks more like an elephant, with polka-dot ears and a green and yellow striped vest. The Banana Splits were dreamt up by William Hanna and Joseph Barbera, the duo responsible for the Hanna-Barbera animation studio, and, quite frankly, countless hours of animated entertainment, like The Flintstones, Yogi Bear, Wacky Races, The Jetsons, Scooby-Doo, The Herculoids, and even the long-running Smurfs animated series, to name just a few. In addition, the company threw their hat into the ring on live-action TV shows and movies, such as The Man from Atlantis, the Emmy award-winning The Gathering. Kiss meets the Phantom of the Park, as well as tackling a TV movie for the Banana Splits entitled The Banana Splits in Hocus Pocus Park, which was originally broadcast as part of the ABC Saturday Superstar movie on November 25th of 1972. And Barbera envisioned the show as being a children's version of the popular Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In comedy show. And that is pretty evident when you watch The Banana Splits, which revels in its absurd and off-the-wall physical gags and abundance of puns. Honestly, think of 1984's Nickelodeon TV show Out of Control, and then have the actors wear large costumes of anthropomorphic animal characters, and you get the basic idea of the Banana Splits Adventure Hour. The live-action segments not only offered comedy skits and musical numbers, but acted as a bridge to the various animated segments in the show. Interestingly enough, the original title of the TV show was going to be The Banana Bunch. That name, it turns out, was already used for a children's book, and the author was unwilling to allow Hanna-Barbera the use of the name. You might think that it wasn't that big of a deal at the time, and it wasn't for the show, but Kellogg's had already made a deal for merchandising on the show, under The Banana Bunch, which resulted in 1.25 million cereal boxes having to be thrown away. I tell you what, I bet if one managed to survive, it would fetch a very pretty penny today. A pretty cool aspect of the creation of the Banana Splits is that Hanna and Barbera contacted none other than Sid and Marty Krofft to construct the actual costumes worn for the show. Now, it bears pointing out that this was before Sid and Marty Krofft became so well known for their own cult TV shows, like H.R. Puffin Stuff, The Bugaloos, Lidsville, Land of the Lost, and Sigmund and the Sea Monsters, to name a few. You see, the Hanna-Barbera studio came up with the designs for the Banana Splits themselves, but they needed someone to craft the costumes and even the sets for the show. The Krofft brothers had already made a name for themselves thanks to their puppeteering act. Having appeared on the likes of the Jack Parr and Dean Martin show, they even had a popular mature puppet show that was a hit at the Seattle's World Fair in 1962, entitled The Dolls of Paris, which featured the vocal talents of such recorded celebrities as Sammy Davis Jr., Milton Berle, Pearl Bailey, Gene Kelly, Phil Silvers, and Mae West. I assume this lavish production and set design is what caught the eye of Hanna and Barbera. Sid Krofft goes into a little more detail in Hal Erickson's 2007 book entitled Sid and Marty Krofft, a critical study of Saturday morning children's television. The author quotes Sid from a 1993 interview in Film Threat magazine where he says, quote, "We were the only ones, including Disney, putting people inside of suits at the time. No one had ever heard of that. So we took the order and built the suits at the time. When the characters walked out of the building, I looked at my brother and said, they're going to make millions." End quote. And for the record, I believe the costumes used in the Banana Splits show really hold up, especially for the time. Each is distinctive in design, colorful, and most importantly of all, friendly. That's something for you to remember. A little bit of news I'll mention at the end of this episode. For what it's worth, the success of the Banana Splits Adventure Hour led to the Krofts getting their shot at producing their own TV shows, with H.R. Puffin Stuff being introduced by the Banana Splits in a 1969 TV special. The characters from the Banana Splits that so many of us of a certain age were captivated by succeeded through the dual performances of the actors in the suits as well as the voice talent employed to speak their dialogue. Jeffrey, or Jeff Winkless, was the performer in Flegel's suit, although he was listed as Jeffrey Brock at the time. Winkless passed away in 2006, but among his IMDb credits, you have Solent Green, The Nest, and Saturday the 14th Strikes Back, as well as voice work for the dubbed versions of Lupin the Third, Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind, Goggle 13 the Professional, and Vampire Hunter D. The voice of Flegel was none other than Paul Winchell, a legend in the voice acting business who passed on in 2005, with notable work in Saturday morning animation including Wacky Races as Dick Dastardly, Wheelie and the Chopper Bunch, and the Smurfs as Gargamel. Although he is probably best known for originating the voice of another beloved animated character, this one for the Walt Disney Studios, the energetic Tigger.
Hey, this is a cinch.
You come in and you look at all the characters on the wall. You try to see whether you can match some kind of a voice quality to the pictures that you see. I was instructed that Tigger was a very exuberant kind of a character, and that at the same time, he was a very humorous kind of a character. So I tried to put together Exuberant, which was a guy who was very excited, you know, all the time. And with his laugh and everything. The thing that I enjoyed most about the character, I really can't put it into words, but I like Tigger. There's a certain quality that I feel that I became identified with in my own mind, so that instead of just reading the lines, I would always ad-lib. I would always throw in something.
Bingo was played by Terrence H. Winkless, credited as Terrence Henry, yes, the brother of Jeff, and it appears that he focused more on directing, as he not only helmed The Nest, which his brother appeared in, but in addition directed 38 episodes of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. It was the exceptional Dawes Butler who provided his voice for Bingo. Legendary hardly scratches the surface when talking about Butler's career. When he passed away in 1988, he had amassed 353 acting credits to his name, with some notable roles in animation including being the voice of Augie Doggy, Elroy Jetson, Huckleberry Hound, Quick Draw McGraw, Scooby-Dum, and of course, Yogi Bear. The actor within the suit for Drooper was credited as Daniel Owen, but was in fact, you guessed it, Dan Winkless. While the role, the physical role of Drooper, is Dan's only acting credit, he has worked in various films as a grip, like True Lies, The Indian in the Cupboard, The Great White Hype, and Breakdown. Now, you might be wondering why the Winkless brothers performed under pseudonyms. The reason for that is they were the sons of Nelson B. Winkless Jr., who was the one who wrote the show's theme song, aka the Tra-La-La song. But he also happened to be a jingle writer for Kellogg's Cereal, who heavily sponsored the Banana Splits. Oh, and he also had a hand in creating this well-known jingle for Kellogg's Rice Krispies.
Sing along for Kellogg's Rice Krispies! Snap, what a happy sound. Snap is the happiest sound I've found. You may clap, rap, tap, slap, but snap makes the world go round. Snap, pop, Rice Krispies.
I say it's crackle, the crispy sound. You gotta have crackle or the clock's not wound. Geese cackle, feathers tickle, belts buckle, beats pickle, but crackle makes the world go round.
Snap, crackle, pop, Rice Krispies.
Now I insist that pop's the sound. The best is missed unless pop's around. You can't stop hopping when the cereal's popping. Join us, won't you?
Snap, crackle, Rice Krispies. Snap,
I say it's crackle.
What a happy sound.
You've got to have
the happiest sound I've found.
You may clap, cackle, grab the stickle, bounce, buckle, beats, crackle.
Snap, crackle, makes the world go round.
I don't know, friends. I just feel that we've lost the art of making memorable commercials. I'll be humming that jingle all day now. By the way, M.B. Winkless Jr. wasn't originally credited for coming up with the Tra-La-La song. Richie Adams and Mark Barkin were the music directors for the series. It was contractual they received credit for the music. Anyway, the voice of Drooper was provided by Alan Melvin, who sadly passed away back in 2008, but is probably best remembered for portraying Sam the Butcher on The Brady Bunch, as well as numerous appearances in shows like The Phil Silvers Show, The Dick Van Dyke Show, Gomer Pyle, USMC, and All in the Family. Much like the other voice actors I've already mentioned, Alan Melvin also had a long list of voice work for animated series, such as Punkin' Puss from Punkin' Puss and Mush Mouse, which was part of 1964's The Megilla Gorilla Show. Melvin voiced Megilla in that very show as well. Alan also voiced Bluto in different Saturday morning Popeye series, in addition to voicing King Voltan in Filmation's exceptional Flash Gordon animated series. The actor within the Snorky costume was Jay Larimore, maybe, because I've also read that Robert Towers was in the suit after James Dove, the original Snorky, was fired for supposedly not being able to work with the Winkless brothers. I can at least tell you this, Robert Towers has had a pretty interesting career, providing voice work on the 1984 animated series Pole Position. He was the singing voice for Snoopy in 1985's You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, and he appeared in 1987's Masters of the Universe live-action film as Karg. Then, as Rada, the Ferengi in an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, as well as the 1932-1934 version of the character of Benjamin Buttons, from 2008's The Curious Case of Benjamin Buttons. The voice for Snorky, well, I told you, he just communicated in honks. Although having said that, I've seen Frank Welker listed in some places, which is odd. Even one spot claimed that he was in the suit during some of the musical numbers. I don't believe that is remotely correct, however. Here's a fun fact for you. The director of the first season of The Banana Splits was none other than Richard Donner, future director of The Omen, Superman the Movie, Lady Hawk, The Goonies, and the Lethal Weapon series, to name a few. He was also responsible for helming the live-action Danger Island segments, but more on that in just a bit. Since it premiered in the late 60s, The Banana Splits had a real Beatles and Monkees vibe going on, especially the latter, in regards to the pop bubblegum songs they would perform during the show. Zipping in one by one, we've been doing it, doing it, doing it, doing the banana split, yo. We've been sliding it, peeling it, scooping it, dipping the banana. Pretty good stuff, right? That came off the Kellogg's 45 record that featured three additional songs. Oh, Doing the Banana Split just so happened to have been written by Barry White. Yeah, that Barry White. That isn't the only music legend to have been involved with writing music for the Banana Splits band. There was also Al Cooper, who had worked with Bob Dylan. And in 1972, he would discover Lynyrd Skynyrd. In addition, he produced and performed on their first three albums and can be heard on the likes of Freebird and Sweet Home Alabama. Gene Pitney and Joey Levine wrote songs for the series, as did Jimmy Radcliffe. I should point out, though, that none of those talented musicians actually performed on the show or albums. It was Ricky Lancelotti of Frank Zappa's Mothers that performed most of the lead vocals on the recordings, although he was uncredited at the time. For what it's worth, the Tra-La-La song actually hit number 96 on the Billboard Hot 100 Singles chart. Now, there were generally recurring segments in episodes featuring the Banana Splits. The opening of each episode was a meeting of the Banana Splits Club. Some of the segments included in a show were Dear Drooper, which was an advice segment. You heard a little of it at the beginning of the show. The Banana Splits News featured Flegel as an ace reporter. This was only during season one, however. There was Riddle Time, Song of the Week, and Wall Gags, which was definitely inspired by Ronan Martin's Laugh-In, where members of the Splits would pop out of a wall painting with jokes. This segment was added in the second season. I think you get the idea of the types of skits that were frequently seen on the show. I need to add that in season one, the Banana Splits had to contend with a rival clubhouse, the Sour Grapes Bunch. The humorous part of this rivalry is the Sour Grapes Bunch were all girls. In fact, they would send a young girl named Charlie, played by Shirley Hillstrom, as a messenger. She would come in go-go dancing in a purple mini dress with the Sour Grapes logo on her back. And she would terrorize the Banana Splits, never saying a word, just continuing to dance until she delivered the note. After the note was delivered, she would dance out the door after taking a quick bow. The other members of the Sour Grapes Bunch all appeared together in only one episode, joining the Splits to perform Doin' the Banana Split. Those members of the Sour Grapes Bunch were portrayed by Deborah Thibodeau, Colette Chenault, Julie Graham, and Kathy O'Dare. Julie and Kathy would eventually show up on the Happy Days TV series. Furthermore, the Banana Splits would occasionally be visited by the very real Dilly Sisters, who were actually a musical act from Mexico. They would show up playing mariachi-styled music. All of these segments would play before and after, wraparounds, if you will, for the handful of animated shorts and the live-action serial featured on the show. These included Microventures, which, much like Danger Island, I have to admit I had never seen in my youth when I was watching the Banana Splits in syndication. It's a little easier to understand with Microventures as it only had 4 episodes. The 4 Microventure episodes were around 5 minutes long, and I suppose you could say there was something of an educational offering. The premise for the short-lived animated series is Professor Carter and his 2 teenage children, Jill and Mike, are able to shrink down to the size of ants, thanks to the professor's micro-reducer. They drive around in their dune buggy so he can teach his children about not just ants, but things like microchips. Of note is the professor, who was voiced by Don Messick, who not only played Dr. Benton Quest in the classic Johnny Quest TV series, but lent his voice to such shows as Scooby-Doo as the titular character, Papa Smurf in the Smurfs animated series, as well as the likes of Ratchet, Gears, and the Constructicon Scavenger in the G1 Transformers animated series. Another animated show that was featured on the Banana Splits Adventure Hour was The Three Musketeers, taking the characters Athos, Porthos, Aramis, and D'Artagnan from the books by Alexandre Dumas, and adding the Queen's handmaiden, Constance, as well as her young nephew, Tully, who I might add desperately wishes to be a musketeer himself. Not that our heroes think a young boy of his age is quite ready to protect the king. Don Messick, being a Hanna-Barbera regular, also did voice work for this 18-episode series as Aramis, in addition to Lost in Space's Jonathan Harris, who played Athos. Bruce Watson voiced D'Artagnan, with Barney Phillips as Porthos. Constance was voiced by Julie Bennett, and Ted Ekelis was Tully. The Three Musketeers episodes ran around 8 minutes and change, for a total of 18 episodes. Sadly, it wasn't picked up for the second season of the Banana Splits, its spot being taken by Hanna-Barbera's The Hillbilly Bears. The third animated series on the Banana Splits Adventure Hour was Arabian Nights. That is Knights with a K, by the way. In which the evil Bakar, the Black Sultan, overtakes the throne of Baghdad, forcing Prince Turhan to run for his life, where he joins forces with his cousin, Princess Nida, as well as Ferik the Magician, Rasim the Strong, and Bez the Beast, with their comic sidekick, Zazum the Donkey, to try and overthrow Bakar and his minions, Vangor and Sundar. The Three Musketeers is an enjoyable animated series, but Arabian Nights is what stood out for me, with its fantasy elements like Bez being able to transform into any animal, or Rasim being as strong as 30 men. It's just a lot of fun. It also, like most all of Hanna-Barbera's animated offerings, had an amazing cast of voice actors. Prince Turhan was voiced by Jay North, as in the original television version of Dennis the Menace. Princess Nida was voiced by Sherry Lewis. Yes, the very same Sherry Lewis, the puppeteer of Lamb Chop and Charlie Horse fame. Don Messick once again lent his voice to the Hanna-Barbera-produced series as Zazum. John Stevenson was Farik the Magician, in addition to Bakar, but you might know him better as the voice of Mr. Slate from the Flintstones. Speaking of the Flintstones, Henry Corden, who was known to voice Fred Flintstone, played Bez the Beast, with the Haunted Mansion's Paul Frees voicing the evil Van Gore. Frank Gersel, of Perry Mason fame, was tapped to play Racine the Strong. Arabian Nights was included in the lineup for the second season of the Banana Splits Adventure Hour. But, like Danger Island, these were just repeats from the first season. In total, there were 18 episodes of Arabian Nights, and they ran around 10 minutes in length. Last but not least is Danger Island, a live-action serial-inspired series, as I already mentioned, that was directed by Richard Donner. I've read that Danger Island was actually 36 episodes, cut down from a 3-hour running time. They were presented in 10-minute serial form for the Banana Split show. The premise of the series is three adventurers have come to a tropical island. Professor Irwin Hayden, played by Mr. Roberts, Frank Ayletter, with his daughter Leslie, played by my three sons, Ronnie Trope, and the professor's assistant, a young man named Lincoln Simmons, played by the late Jan Michael Vincent. This island is where the professor's brother vanished years earlier. And while there, the trio meet up with Elihu Morgan, a shipwrecked sailor played by Rockne Tarkington, of Black Samson fame, as well as his sidekick, Chongo, who is a native young man who can only speak in bird calls and monkey-like cries. Chongo was portrayed by Kim Kahana, who would go on to become a stuntman in such films as Passenger 57 and Jeepers Creepers. And it's been said that the show's catchphrase caught on with school kids at the time. That would be, "Uh-oh, Chongo!" While on the island, this band of adventurers have to outwit an evil pirate named Captain Mutan, as well as cannibals that call the island home. Three tribes, known as the Ashmen, the Headhunters, and the Skeleton Men. Interestingly enough, I've read the idea of Danger Island actually spun off from an attempt to tackle a live-action Johnny Quest TV series. Now, I mentioned earlier that I have no recollections of seeing either Danger Island or Microventures. There could be a reason for that. You see, when it was syndicated, the Banana Splits Adventure Hour became the Banana Splits and Friends show. The 31 episodes that were an hour in length were re-edited into half-hour shows in a television syndication package of 125 half-hour episodes. Depending on the day of the week, you could catch an Adam Ant short in the show, or Secret Squirrel, an episode of Yogi's Gang, as well as The New Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. This was a live-action series combined with animation. Think Roger Rabbit, or some of the segments from Mary Poppins or Bedknobs and Broomsticks. So it's very possible that I just wasn't seeing the show when Danger Island was being shown. The Banana Splits had an 8-issue comic book series by Gold Key Comics, as well as a slew of merchandise. To help illustrate how popular the show was, friends, when it started up in syndication, costumes were created of the Banana Splits, professional suits, so that a local TV station could purchase them and create a local Banana Splits fan club, and have the characters appear on their local shows. For $900, you could nab all four, or grab your favorite for $250 apiece. Now here is something I was totally unaware of. Apparently, in 2008, the Banana Splits received a revival, with new shorts debuting on Cartoon Network and the original series finding a home on Boomerang, in addition to a new album and a kids area at the Hard Rock Park in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This kids area didn't last long, however, as it soon became Freestyle Music Park before closing in 2009. Okay, now remember when I said to keep in mind that the Banana Splits, the character designs by Hanna-Barbera, and the costumes constructed by the Crofts had a friendly vibe? Well, it was announced that later this year, the Banana Splits will be making a return in a new horror movie. I'm sure this was inspired by Five Nights at Freddy's, but here's the info we have. It's going to be released through Warner Brothers Home Entertainment and debut on the Sci-Fi Channel. According to the synopsis, a boy named Harley is spending his birthday with his family at a taping of the Banana Splits TV show. While there, things take a dark turn when people start dying. I know this is absolutely a knee-jerk reaction, but I'm very much against the idea of the Banana Splits possibly being used as horror icons. Who knows? Maybe they won't be. Maybe they are just the focus of where all the bad stuff takes place. You know, the TV show. But I somehow doubt this will be the case. Hey, perhaps I'll get a chance to cover it for the Saturday Frights podcast in the near future. And I think that's about all I can share for the Banana Splits. Friends, thank you for taking the time to listen to what I had to say about this classic TV series. And let's hope that in the near future, we might finally be seeing the series released on DVD and Blu-ray. For what it's worth, you can generally find me every single day writing on the Retroist site, as well as the Diary of an Arcade Employee and Saturday Frights Facebook page. If you have any comments on the podcast or maybe suggestions for a future episode, you can contact me at vicsage@retroist.com. The music you heard at the beginning and ending of our show is courtesy of Earl Green's TheLogbook.com, kindly used with permission. Now, I want to thank the Retroist himself, not just for hosting this new podcast, but for creating a spot on the internet where we fans of all things retro can get a daily dose. When you need your retro fix, and we all do, hop on over to the Retroist. Now, here's a hint on what I'll be talking about on the next Pop Culture Retrorama podcast.
One thing, how did you know what was happening to me? How did you know who I am?
The shadow knows.
This has been a Retroist production. Thank you for listening, and have a better one. Goodbye.
End of line.